Mike Beer. In the control tower, like an air traffic controller.
They never let me leave, Steve. There's always something to be done.
Well, you're working with a skeleton crew, as it happens. So, yeah.
that's exactly right. Once the New York stuff is done, you just move right on to the next track. That's all. All you can do.
Well, you've been doing videos, and you and Dan Illman will have all kinds of stuff to keep everybody focused and prepared. In fact, let's start. Rather than starting with Belmont, let's start with Breeders' Cup with you. First of all, tell everybody what your coverage is going to entail here over the next 7 days.
Oh, there's going to be actually a lot this year. We'll always, of course, we have our videos. Dan and I will do a video preview for all the Breeders' Cup races just like usual, and we'll sort of try and touch on every horse if we can and just talk about how we look at the race and who we wind up picking and maybe how we'll bet it. So we'll have videos for all of them. There'll be a couple of special out-of-the-gate editions where we'll just sort of take, maybe the top two or three races for each day, Friday and Saturday, and go over those again. So you're going to get, plenty of me on these races. And then this year, for the first time, I think maybe Tuesday, I'm going to have just a little, not an in-depth analysis, but an analysis for every Breeders' Cup race in the form. So just short little top three picks and a little analysis for right up. And that'll be in the form for Breeders' Cup Friday and Saturday. So my opinions on these races, hopefully, they shouldn't get lost if you're paying attention.
We'll talk some broad strokes in a second, but how do you generally bet over the 2 days? What's your general approach?
Yeah, I don't change it too much just from a regular approach, actually. I mean, especially on Breeders' Cup days, I think you want to, really look and see which sequences you might have a real good opinion in, especially at a price as far as multi-race wagers go. And that's how I approach it. I wish on days like this sometimes that I was more of a trier super player. I'm just really not. It's not my thing. I don't look at races that way. So I don't play those. But, pick fours, the pick five, certainly, I'm not much of a pick three player anymore, but on Breeders' Cup Day, I can be. And I still am looking for prices that I can, make win bets on and play exactas on. I still, I always keep those options open on a regular day, and that stuff doesn't change for me on Breeders' Cup.
One thing that I think we lose sight of sometimes when it comes to this event, when you say, looking for horses to bet straight, or if you're an exacta key type, exacta wheels and part wheels, tries, etc., the 50 cent amount on the pick threes and the tries is really can be really fun and productive, because you get to use more horses than you might normally on a day-to-day basis and try to catch a price. But one thing that when we're playing Monday through Friday and weekends and so forth on a going basis, there's favorites or second choices that we just immediately, that we think are vulnerable enough to not be interested in. In the Breeders' Cup, you might have a second and third choice and even some favorites that your mentality says, well, I can't bet them. Well, whoa, whoa, whoa. Take a very close look and don't be as dismissive, because, horses that were 8-5 in stake races most of the year are suddenly going to be 7-2 and 4-1. And there's nothing wrong with that in this setting, especially if you're an exacta tri super player.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. Because the money just gets, spread. There are so many different horses that when you're going through them, it looks like they have a chance to win, that the horses that sometimes, rate to be, relatively strong favorites. And even in a Breeders' Cup race, they could still be a relatively strong favorite. They don't necessarily get bet that way just because there are so many different ways to go. And I think part of that mentality too is, you know, it's Breeders' Cup. Why take the favorite when you can, you know, there are five other really good horses in the race. So why settle for the favorite? And that sometimes leads to the favorite actually being an overlay.
Well, on that topic, your initial pass through, and I'm sure you've thumbed through everything at least once or twice already, and some initial gut reactions to the pre-entered fields.
You know, I'm going to actually do most of my work on it this weekend. I've done one pass through most of the races. I'm still at the stage right now of just trying to, you know, catch up on all the replays that I've missed and trying to get all that stuff done first before I start looking at the horses and the races individually. But, you know, one race that I kept going back to, I think this is mostly because, and this is, you know, this could come into play what we were just talking about with favorites. It mostly because I don't, you know, I feel like everybody's sort of looking at the classic and saying, well, Kinsey feels like he's going to take money, and he just feels like a really vulnerable horse in that race for a lot of different reasons. You know, so we'll see what happens, you know, as far as how they bet the race. It just feels like that's the one where if he is going to be, you know, the favorite or close to it, that, you know, he seems like a horse who's worth, you know, just trying to beat in this race. We all know that if he runs his best, he'll probably win. It doesn't feel like a mile and a quarter is what he really wants. And so I started with that race, and, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I know that there are several horses in there. And this includes the Jockey Club Gold Cup 1-2 finishers, you know, Code of Honor and Vino Rosso. And they can obviously both win. And I'm not particularly enamored of either of them, although I get the case for both of them. So it just sort of opened the race up a little bit to me. And the more I'm looking at it right now anyway, I feel like Sadler's Horse Higher Power is very interesting. You know, he's still sort of a one-hit wonder, but if he runs a specific classic, he'll probably win, even though that's the kind of race where when I looked at it, I don't know, there were just so many no-shows in there. It's just hard for me to get a real handle on that race. But I'm not way against him. I'm leaving him, you know, really up there and open right now. But the other horse that I keep coming back to in the classic right now anyway, is Yoshida for Mott. And I say this as being somebody who's never been a huge fan of Yoshida's. I always preferred him as a turf horse. The more I look at his dirt form, the more I like this horse. And I, you know, maybe this is a sort of a Saratoga thing because I think he's run great in all of his Saratoga races. I just think if he can run one of those races, he can beat this field. To me, his Whitney and his Woodward were both, I think, really, really good efforts. And his Woodward in particular, where I think it could get sort of lost in a shuffle. You know, he wound up, you know, showing up late for third in that race. But I don't know, just the way the trip that he got in that race, taken back, and, you know, the pace was really holding together in front of him. He made a pretty big run into that race, I thought, considering the trip he got. And I know that McKenzie dusted him in the Whitney, but that was a good McKenzie. And this horse, to me, ran almost as well as McKenzie did in the Whitney. And if, you know, McKenzie doesn't want the mile and a quarter and this horse can just run as well in the Breeders' Cup this year as he ran last year when I thought he was actually a sneaky good fourth, I don't know. I think this is a race that he could win, and he just feels like a horse who maybe just won't get that much attention with all the other options that there are out there, and this is in a sort of a wide-open Breeders' Cup.
Well, and I had to get my Express Bet piece done this week, and it drops today, usually right around noon, actually, and I'll send out the link. And I picked Yoshida second behind Vino Rosso, and for all those same reasons. He looks like Drosselmeyer as much as, you know, as comparisons, you know, can be made, and not every, you know, you can kind of jury rig anything. But I will say one thing about that further. Not only does he look like Drosselmeyer, but McKenzie looks like Game On Dude.
You know what? That's actually a very good point. You're right. I suppose the one thing with Yoshida, if you could have anything different, he, you know, just wouldn't be as dependent on trip and pace as he is, because you just know where he's going to be early. And, you know, that's not the thing that I love when I'm betting any horse, especially in a race where, you know, he really doesn't hold any edge. Where he's going to be coming from last, I don't like that. But everything else, to me, he has in this race.
Yeah, it does feel like you don't want to lose touch with this field, that you do want to be in the front half. And he's got, you know, I think he's got enough tactical ability to remain close. I mean, Vino Rosso is who I ended up putting on top for now. I mean, let's see how they line up and everything else. And we also want to see what this, you know, it's hard to know. Some people asked already, you know, what the track will be like. Well, you know that they're going to continue to maintain it. Dennis Moore is going to continue to maintain it, you know, deep and quiet and safe, quote unquote. And that part, I don't think you're going to, you know, you're not going to get a tighter, slicker version of that track on Breeders' Cup weekend.
Yeah, I definitely don't think you are. I think you're going to get more of the same out there. And so, you know, hopefully, you know, all you can ask for at this stage of the game, you know, when it comes, you know, race day, of course, especially, but as of right now, you can all get a better track. I mean, you know, whether it's fast or slow or however all that stuff is, you just want to be fair so that, you know, horses aren't compromised just because of whatever their running style is.
Who were the short prices that you initially feel are vulnerable, particularly vulnerable, beside McKenzie?
You know, I don't know if I feel like, you know, obviously it feels like Midnight Beast is going to be one. I didn't necessarily feel like she was that vulnerable. And that's mostly because I'm not a particular fan of the three-year-old fillies in a race like that. And it just feels like she sort of towers over. She's already proven she's better, you know, than the East Coast fillies and the West Coast group. They don't really do that much for me. So, you know, I didn't really look at her as vulnerable. I know that there's, you know, a lot of talk that Bricks and Mortar could be a vulnerable short price if he goes in the turf, but I don't even know if I look at that race that way. You know, it doesn't feel like a group of Europeans that are particularly scary. I know that, you know, he may not want to go a mile and a half. I don't know, you know, why necessarily people would think he can't get it. I know he hasn't been that far yet, but I don't know what based on his races makes you think he's not going to get a mile and a half. I haven't really seen it.
Nothing.
Yeah, I just haven't seen it. I just, you know, so to me, he wasn't all that vulnerable either. You know, he doesn't have to win, but I don't know. I didn't look at him as you know, being a horse who was, you know, necessarily that you wanted to stand super strong against. You know, you don't have to love him, but I don't know. I didn't see him being that vulnerable. What other big favorites are there, really? I mean, most of the other races feel like they're sort of, you know,
Sister Charlie
contenders.
Sister Charlie,
yeah, she could be vulnerable. I mean, listen, she's obviously really good. I wouldn't sit here and make a big case against her, but at least some good Europeans are coming for that race.
Omaha Beach.
Listen, he's just not my kind of horse. I mean, I don't, you know, running in the mile to me, you know, doesn't do a lot for me, but you know, I don't know. That's the kind of race, too, where Catalina Cruiser is not even going to run in that race anymore, right? It seems like, is he going?
No, he's going to the sprint. He's sprinting.
Yeah, he's going to the sprint. So, I mean, that, you know, I guess the best thing that Omaha Beach has going for him is that he's, you know, running in that race. So, I don't know. To me, you know, listen, Steve, he was really good on the way to the Derby, finally, when he figured it out. And obviously, you just have to give him all the credit in the world for coming back off of that layoff in that race and, you know, running down that horse. You know, all those things are obviously really good, and he's a talented horse. But I don't know. I feel like he's just way off at this point. Maybe I'm wrong about it. Maybe he really truly is a top horse, but I just think he's way overhyped. And I've always thought that about him. And I don't know. I don't see any reason why, you know, he has to win that race. I think they found the right race for him. But I can't really bet against that horse at a short price.
Well, and there's some nice there's some serious horses lining up in there, not the least of which Mr. Money on the three-year-old front. Both Mr. Money and Spun to Run are serious, improbable on the three-year-old front. What's wrong with Cole Front? Pletcher has engineered horses like this successfully in this race. Certainly more successful than Baffert. And by the way, yesterday it came up with Rich Eng and got a flood of response from people that had latched on to that statistic. Baffert, a glaring 8 starters, no wins, no seconds, no thirds, just Dortmund's bad fourth. And that is a scary... I mean, that's just stunning, actually. I mean,
it really is. You know, and what's interesting, too, about that race is, you know, listen, you know, as well, you know, Omaha Beach is sort of the leading three-year-old in there, but at least with Mr. Money and Improbable, you know, both, listen, maybe neither one of them is as good as Omaha Beach, but at least with those two horses, you have, you know, the thing that you can point to with them is that, you know, they both ran poorly in their most recent starts, but they're both... This is exactly what they want to do. They want a mile, these two horses. And so you could easily admit that both of them are going to run better than they have in their recent starts. And, you know, what's wrong with that at a good price?
Well, and the Korean horse, this blue chipper, who the hell knows what this horse is?
Yeah, true enough.
Mystery horse. We love mystery horses. They're because they're mysterious.
Yeah, that's why we love them.
Who's your sprint lean right now going in?
Boy, can you even have one? I mean, there's just so much going on in that race, and I'm, you know, a big Mottoli guy. So I guess if I had to lean, I would just lean there and, you know, just expect him. I know that the pace could get really fast in there. Just expect him to do what he's been doing all year long. And that is, you know, use his speed to get position and then somehow just find a way to be better than these horses. You know, he's just been really, really good. And if I had, you know, right now, without even having even tried to put that race together yet, if you had told me I had to pick somebody, I would just take him on faith because I just think he's really, really good. But it's also interesting to me that the way that the race could set up, it's interesting to me that Catalina Cruiser goes in that race because, you know, he just might be the one sitting it out early and coming with a big run late. And this horse has just made so few mistakes in his life.
Kofefi? You a Kofefi believer?
I am now. I didn't read, you know, to me, she was one of those horses who was hard for me to get into. I mean, that's probably mostly because she was so lightly raced, but, you know, I don't know what's not to like about her right now. Her races are just completely dominant. I really liked her tests where she got involved in that duel and prevailed. But, you know, she's one who, if she was too short a price, I would probably start looking around a little bit. In that race, that's one of the races that I haven't even really taken a huge look at. You know, but you have the New York horse in there, right? Come Dancing. There's nothing wrong with her. She could get a good trip. I'm a little concerned about her because as good as she is, she hasn't been beating great fields lately, and she's really developed a very bad tendency to not break great. And if she breaks slowly in the Breeders' Cup and Kofefi comes out of there running, she's going to be in really big trouble. But, I mean, she's a really good horse. I still think as much winning as she's been doing this year, I still think she's underrated.
That's a race that I think one tendency we have in Breeders' Cup, as a season goes on and horses bubble to the surface in certain divisions, we have a mentality a lot of times to think, oh, well, who's going to beat her in the Breeders' Cup or him? Do not let that cloud your judgment when you sit down next week with the PPs. Do not have a preconceived, written in stone impression that was created in May or reinforced in September. It is meaningless. It completely, you know. You may have a positive view going in, but handicap the race on its merits.
That's good advice year round, but in particular for the Breeders' Cup, it's really good advice. I mean, what other 2 days of racing during the year do you really you know, almost have to keep an open mind about every race. In the Breeders' Cup, you just have to, because there are too many different horses that can win.
Exactly. That's exactly right. We'll save the two-year-olds, unless you've got a particular two-year-old impression that is itching to get out.
not really, although I will say the juvenile is maybe the race I'm most anticipating over the 2 days. I just feel like there are three really, really good horses in there. Recognizing that Dennis's Moment is, to me anyway, the horse to beat. But, I've been taken by Maxfield in both of his starts, and I don't see why, he can't go with those horses. That, to me, that's a great at least three-horse matchup, and there are other good horses in there too.
Mm. Mm-hmm. The Scabbard from Eddie Keneally.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Then you fold in the California horses that are running out of their own stall. It's a really good. I know that there were a couple of horses between Tis the Law and Green Light Go that didn't make it, but it's a fun group, without a doubt. And the girls group is wide open.
Yeah, it is. It'll be interesting to see, to me anyway, it'll be interesting to see what that, the Simon Callahan filly does in there. Donna Veloce, is that her name?
Yeah, Donna Veloce, second. That's a lot to ask. Wow.
Yeah, it's a lot to ask, but you won't see too many more impressive debuts than that one. She never took a deep breath in that race. She looks like she could be anything, that horse.
We'll have fields locked in, and we'll have the serious capping decisions to make and ticket building. Remind everybody, spend as much time or nearly as much time building your tickets and laying out your budget as you are handicapping. Always don't leave that for last minute. Mike, let's turn to a really good Belmont Saturday card and Sunday. I haven't dug into Sunday, but Sunday's got some intrigue as well. But tomorrow,
good, yeah.
Yeah. But even today is a nice card.
Yeah, they've done a good job. It's been hit and miss a lot this meet. It hasn't been, to me anyway, the strongest Belmont fall meet. But they've picked pace for sure. And tomorrow, just there were a couple of prices in tomorrow's races that I didn't necessarily have interest in betting against, but overall, that's a pretty strong card tomorrow.
We also had a couple of good maiden races yesterday. That $2 million Chestertown had a kind of a bad start, but clearly he's got some talent. And it was the Linda Rice.
The Linda Rice second time starter, they all win. So it wasn't that surprising that she beat the $2 million horse. But, I mean, he just seemed like a typical, he needed a race, and he certainly looks like a horse who wants to go a lot longer than he was going yesterday. It's funny, too, because I'd been told by one of my clocker buddies that he's was a terrible gate horse. The two times they breezed him out the gate, that he was just awful from the gate. So he was just telling me that he probably won't break and he'll probably lose tomorrow, but he looks like a horse who can really run, and he was 100% right. He didn't break, and he needed a race.
Well, we'll look for them to come back. And of course, there was also the other one too, from Wednesday, Bella Via. That was okay. Although that race did not come back fast. I was a little surprised.
Yeah. It did, and I was surprised too. Yeah, that horse debuted in a really live race at Saratoga. No surprise that he wanted a short price. But you're right, it didn't come back that fast, and he just got one of those, perfect trips and rides right up the inside and did what he had to do to win. But he didn't seem like he was, necessarily as impressive as he was first time out when he was second in a really good race.
Well, and I also, we talked to, we talked the other day to Jonathan Thomas, and I've always got too many PPs, but there was the turf race, that Pythagorean that he debuted yesterday, and
right.
The Quip, I tell you, the Quip sibling, Laughable. Suddenly the non-wins are piling up.
Yeah, it's true. Really disappointing yesterday, though. I mean, at least in the first start, was so green that you just you know, felt like, you know, who cares that, you know, gave it up in the stretch in that race. He just really needed it. And he seemed like she ran a lot better second time out, but man, that was not a good performance yesterday. Although the horses that ran 1-2 in there, you know, they both look like they're pretty good. They had finished close together at debuts in the same race, and they came right back, and they both improved yesterday.
Well, today, if for those of you who haven't had a chance to look at today's card, I'll just hit a quick highlight. You've got in the third race, it's just a group of five, but it's one of those conditional claimer slash allowancey type races with Realm and You're to Blame and Bon Raison and Bonus Points and Plainsman. Is Bonus Points, you know, he was cross entered. Is he,
I haven't checked the early changes. Yeah, haven't checked the scratches yet. I don't know if he's running here. Let's see if we can get those.
Because Andy usually gets those out at about now, actually. So let's see if Andy's gotten the racing department. Not yet, no.
Not yet, nothing.
I'll keep an eye on that. So there's that race. Then in the eighth, 7 furlong turf, you've got some horses that, including Bound for Nowhere as the favorite for Wesley Ward, but you've got a whole bunch of former stake horses.
That's a terrific race, and it feels like the 7 furlongs too sort of brings everything together, because you know, you have some horses who maybe want to go shorter and maybe want to go longer. They all sort of meet in the middle, and you know, listen, maybe Bound for Nowhere is probably just the horse to beat in there, but it's no walkover for him. You know, hasn't been seen since they shipped him over to Ascot, and he feels like he's missed a couple of races since he's come back. You know, we'll see what he does in here. He's got a lot of talent. I will say I caught his most recent workout, though. He wasn't too impressive in his most recent work. I'll say that. He got outworked by a 2-year-old from Wesley Ward's barn. I didn't love that about him. And, you know, with Made You Look and Therapist drawn to his outside, if nothing else for Therapist, this is his distance. This is what this horse wants to do. I think both of those horses are have a real chance to be Bound for Nowhere if he's a short price.
Well, that all leads up to us running. We're going to try to win the Friday night cap 2 weeks in a row, Mike.
That was amazing last week, Steve. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That was a good one.
What I was surprised at, not that she wasn't going to be a bit of a price because she's got an ugly-looking record, but if you put a piece of paper over her dirt races and just looked at the five sprints, the turf sprints, she was as good as the second choice.
That's
what I thought was a little strange. And, you know, she was doing something for the first time, stretching out. Why wouldn't people, you know, take a little closer look? Listen, that's okay.
That's right. Good for you.
Yeah, exactly. She's a hard little trier too. And, you know, they came around the turn and Benji Hernandez, I turned to Tina. I said, He's not riding her. I mean, she did it all on her own. I mean, she really only ran the last 2.5 furlongs.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well,
crazy.
We'll see what happens next time. You know, go along with her again and see what happens.
Oh, you bet. In fact, Gary called me yesterday and said, I'm going through the Aqueduct Condition book. There's a race for everybody, you know, for all the horses. Volterine will come back. Yeah, she'll come back on the 10th. Yeah, exactly. No, we're very pleased, excited. This horse, and I'm going to repeat this several times this morning for full disclosure, because if he runs a big race, he has had tieback surgery since that start. He came out of that last start, making sounds. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so all FYI, right, I don't want, you know, if he pops and then I say next week on the radio, well, he did have, you know, throat surgery.
Right.
I don't want to hear, that's one of those funny debates about whether you disclose it or, you know, should it be publicly disclosed and, you know, that kind of thing. It's because a lot of times a horse will win and then you'll hear, you know, 2 days later, well, he had, you know, we had the myectomy or we had the tie back or, you know, whatever breathing work was done. So
right.
I don't know. I that's a good race. Who'd you pick in there, by the way?
what's that, the ninth race today?
Yeah.
That's the race with Puig dropping down. Is he in that race?
Yes, yes. Levine.
Yeah, that's I took him. You know, mostly just because, you know, I guess a lot of people, if you didn't see his second start last year at Saratoga, that's a race he was going to win. He just got to lugging in so badly in the stretch that Lescano couldn't ride him. But he was going to beat that maiden special Wayfield. And then he came off the layoff. And even though his race off the layoff, and it was a couple months ago, you know, was filled out by long shots, 1, 2, 3. They were all huge prices. The races actually turned out to be pretty good. And he didn't run poorly in that race. So I just felt like dropping down, he was supposed to be tough.
Well, let's dive in and look tomorrow. And we talked the Keeneland 8th and 9th as part of the cross-country pick 5 with James Scully. So I want to get the 7th, 8th, and 9th from you. But there's also, even before that, we've got the English Channel, which I thought looked pretty competitive. You've got a Chad Brown in front run the Fed that, you know, probably, you know, goes favored, but doesn't have to win. Some thoughts?
Front run the Fed, you know, I guess, you know, he is the horse to beat in there. He's paired up a couple of fast races, and he knows that he can get the mile and the better talk now. He's the horse to beat. I picked against him and will bet against him a little bit with Bourbon War. Who ran, you know, he was in that better talk now too. That was his turf debut, and he ran well in that race. I mean, yeah, at the end of the day, front run the Fed got the better of him in the stretch, but, you know, this horse moved first in that race, took over to a short lead in the stretch. He still looked a little bit green to me in that race. He had his head turned sideways for a lot of the stretch in there before he got out finished, but I thought all in all, a good race, and it was a good race for a horse who I feel like, you know, as much promise as he had early in his career as a dirt horse, and he certainly ran some good races on dirt, I feel like there was always that feeling in the back of your mind that he might be better when they switch surfaces with him, because he has that pedigree, and they did try to debut him on the grass before he got rained off, and it just felt like ultimately the surface change was coming, and I thought he handled it really well when they switched over. His Hill Prince was...
Oh, that was bad. Sometimes you can't tell if it's a call drop, but that one I could tell. Deja, get Mike back. That was bad. Sometimes, you know, you hear a little noise and you think, is he there? Is he not? That was clear as day. I do want to get his thoughts fully. I thought that, in addition to the obvious, with, you know, front run the Fed and Bourbon War, I thought that Call Me Harry, the Kelsey Danner, 8-1 with Manny Franco, and has run two really nice races. This is a New York bred that Danner, you know, has brought up to Saratoga, two sprints, and has to stretch out, but is a street sense out of a Bernardini mare. So I thought that I wanted to get Call Me Harry involved with those other two. There we go. Mike.
Hey, Steve.
Mike, there you go. Yeah. Hey, we dropped you like a
bad. How far did we get? I like Bourbon War. I don't know how much of that you got, but
yeah, no, we got a fair amount. We got a fair amount.
Yeah.
And
I just feel like it's a great spot for this horse.
Yeah. Gets the outside stalking trip where the air is fresh and clear, as Marty McGee says. I was telling people waiting for you coming back, I thought Call Me Harry wasn't impossible, you know, stepping up, stretching out.
I don't think he is either. He's, if nothing else, you know, obviously he wasn't facing horses like this, but he was really impressive in his two wins at Saratoga. I mean, he won both of those races for fun. If he can stretch out, and, you know, it's not like there's a ton of speed in this race, get to the front in this race, I wouldn't be surprised if he runs a big race.
Well, the English Channel starts off the, you know, the heaviest action, although there's state bred maidens going 6.5 before that as part of the pick 5. There's actually a first race on the card, is 2-year-olds going 1 1/16, and Bill Motzen's an even money favorite, Forza de Oro, that's a half to Silver Dust. But on the outside, How about Kimmel, who's born again hard, mandatory for Mr. Morton, 7-2, and is a half to I'm a Chatterbox.
Yeah, that's who I took in the race. I think that horse is really going to improve. He's bred to stretch out. You know, they rated him early in that debut sprinting. He was racing on pretty gamely at the end. He just looks like a horse who, you know, got in a really useful debut and is bred to go longer. Listen, Forza of the Oro's debut was actually very good. I mean, he, you know, talk about missing the break. He missed it a good 5 or 6 lengths. He totally walked out of there. And to make the run that he did to get back into contention, and he was right there outside the winner in mid-stretch, he just couldn't finish it off. But, you know, considering the start he got off to and the amount of work he had to do to get back into the race, he actually ran big. If he improves off the debut, he's probably going to win. But he does have to break, and, you know, there's no reason that Mandatory can't really improve stretching out as well. And, you know, it just seems like he's going to be a much better race.
Yeah, That's what makes this a good card. Then there's 2-year-old state breds going 1 mile and 16th on the grass. That's a full field, so you got to do pedigree work. A lot of good stuff happening. Let's get to the second half of the card, and particularly the late pick 4 and first level allowance, 1 mile and 16th on the turf. Fillies and mares going long, and this is the start of the cross country pick 5. What'd you do here?
Yeah, this is the first leg of the cross country and the late. Pick 4 at Belmont. This is the race where I'm just not going to try and beat Magic Star. She's going to be a short price for Chad. She debuted in the last race on Travers Day, I believe it was the finale on Travers Day. If you didn't see it, you know, it's a debut worth going back and watching. She didn't even try, and she won for fun. I mean, they took her back in the race. She was loaded the entire way around the track. Still had a lot of ground to make up when they came to the stretch, and she erased it without even trying. She just looks like a horse who could be really good for Chad. And as much as I like some of the other horses in this race, I'm just not going to try and beat her. I do like On the Town. I think she's a pretty good horse for Hennig, and she's improving from race to race. And I do respect that. Recently, anyway, she's shown a little more willingness to get into the race early. And I do think she ran really well the last time we saw her, but it was back in May. And, you know, there's a layoff since then. If she takes another step forward, I suppose, you know, she could make it close with Magic Star. But Magic Star just looked too good to me, Steve. And I just don't want to try and beat that horse.
No, I hear you. And, you know, the horses like this, you know, there's two schools of thought sometimes when it comes to Chad Brown runners, and not just Chad either. Any serious and you know, heavy head type of barn, sometimes you look at a horse like this and you say, well, if the horse was that good, why aren't they running in a stake? Other cases, you know, they're taking their time. I mean, obviously, a filly that didn't debut until August of her 3-year-old year, you know, but it was $500,000 purchase. There was, you know, there was some real anticipation that, you know, so Chad is obviously thinking about building her up and getting her, you know, ready to face stake company as a 4-year-old. And you don't have to feed them to the wolves and to, you know, more experienced and accomplished horses at first asking. So I do hear that. Oh, well, why isn't she a stake if she's that good?
Yeah, true enough. I mean, it's, with Chad, it makes it easy, obviously, because he's just got so many other options in the division. He doesn't really have to rush this horse. It's in all of the other races that she could have run in. So just taking his time makes sense. And, you know, as you say, she debuted at the end of August. There's real need. Where are they going to run her? Which major race are in at the second half of the year? I think they're probably just doing the right thing.
Yeah, agreed. You know, if she had started, you know, earlier in the late spring, early summer, you know, you point to the Queen Elizabeth, and, you know, that's your goal for a 3-year-old filly that gets a late start. But, you know, it's not. I mean, look at who you're actually. That's a great analogy. Look at who you're comparing her to. Cambier Park.
Right. Right. Who's been racing all year long and is already, you know, a multiple graded stakes winner when she went into the QE2. So, yeah, there's no reason to run this horse in a race like that.
Well, it gets us to the Bold Ruler and the return here of Maximum Security, way since the Haskell had been hoping maybe to get to Travers or Pennsylvania Derby. Neither of those worked. The colic episode as well, and he's about 5 weeks removed from that. And draws the rail, which I don't know if Jason Service, as if there wasn't enough, there isn't enough complications associated with this horse. The rail only adds to the burdens.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think to me the biggest thing that you worry about with him is just the fact, you know, since the Derby, you know, we haven't really seen much of this horse, and of course he missed the other two major targets of the summer that he was supposedly going to run in. To me, that's what you worry about with him. I personally don't worry about the 7 furlongs or the rail with this horse. He's got, you know, just based on seeing his races, he has plenty of natural speed. I don't see why this would be a big problem for him to break from the inside going 7. And it's not like this is, you know, a 7 furlong sprint that's loaded with burners. It's not, there's not huge speed in this race. Wonderful Light has some. Nick's Go, I guess, has some. But, I mean, you're really going to worry about Nick's Go in this race. Maximum Security should break running and get a trip in here. And I don't know. He's probably the horse to beat, Steve. I'm happy to take at least a small shot against him, mostly because of all the other stuff we were talking about, that, you know, just missing races and the colic episode, and they're prepping. It sounds like, anyway, they're prepping for the Cigar Mile, which, you know, hopefully he gets to run in. So maybe this is just the race to take a shot against him at a really short price. And, you know, as I went through it, you know, first of all, I'll just say, not that I'm, you know, taking him in the race, but I, you know, respect Killybeck's captain, and I just think he's had a really good year for Terra Nova. I liked his win last time, but I'm just going to, you know, try and beat Maximum Security with the two outside horses. And obviously Prince Lucky makes a lot of sense. Maybe he's more of a mile kind of horse, but I don't, you know, to me, he's just a turn horse, and 7 furlongs should be good for him. And his form overall is just good. I could easily see him winning this race. Diamond King's the better price. I'm not convinced that he's good enough to beat the two favorites, but he feels like he might be worth a gamble at the price he's going to be. And I, you know, have always thought, you know, one turn is what this horse wants. 7 to 8 furlongs around one turn. That, to me, is this horse's game. I understand why they've continued to run him in two turn races and, you know, try and build up a bag. He's run well in some of them. He just seems like he's right there every time with the winning. I just like him going shorter. I thought he ran really well against Cole Front last time, basically a race-long duel. He had his head in front late. He could put it away. This distance is better for him. He's got plenty of tactical speed where he doesn't need the lead, but he'll be up close. I just felt like he could be the right price in this race, and I took him on top. But I'm not, you know, I'm not way against Maximum Security. I think he makes a lot of sense. I just feel like this might be the race to try and beat him.
No, I don't disagree, and I've really come to love what Killybeck's captain does. Terra Nova's done an amazing job with him.
I agree. I mean, he's really had an incredible year this horse. The amount of improvement he's shown this year is amazing. His Forgo was actually good. His Nehrud back in July was great. He fumbled terribly at the start of that race. He was really good in that race. Yeah, to me, Terra Nova is just, he's more one of the most underrated trainers in the country. I think he does an unbelievable job, and he's gotten this horse so good. I could easily see him on another good race here.
The third leg it's actually the fourth leg of the bet, but the third Belmont race for the cross country is the Awad. And boy, this really came up fun.
This is a great race. I mean, yeah. I don't think I could argue with any pick anybody told me that they were making the race. Yeah, I mean, maybe the 6 and the 7, you know, look like sort of rank outsiders, but I don't know. Everybody else in the race, you know, you could make a case for them, and I couldn't argue with it. I narrowed it down to mainly 3 that I want to use, and I don't even know if they'll even be in the top 3 when the race is all said and done. There's just way too different, many ways to go. I will say that Tiesto, the 3 for Mott, is the morning line favorite. And if that holds, I'll just bet against that horse. His debut was good. He looked like they paid a lot of money for this horse. He won easily. He can win this race, but I don't think I would take a short price on him. I thought he was fine first time out. I didn't love the field that he beat, and I think this is going to be tougher for him. So as the favorite, I'll try and beat him. But he can win. I made my top pick, Pixel 8, before. I know that his two turf races are a little slow on paper, but they were also two races at really slow paces. So it's not going to be easy to get a fast final time figure. They were walking in those races. And I thought he ran well in his turf debut, two horses that were on the lead together in front of him. You know, he just couldn't catch them. He was racing on really gamely in the stretch. He held his ground on those horses. He just couldn't gain on them. I thought he ran fine, and I thought he really improved last time. I know it was yielding turf, and it probably wasn't a strong field, but he sat a trip, and when he came clear, he won that race very easily. I like the way he finished it, and he feels like he's going to be a price in this race. And I feel like he's the kind of horse for the right trip in this race. He should be forward, but he doesn't need the lead. I like him. I'm a big By Land and Sea fan, and I'm using that horse. I thought his debut at Saratoga sprinting was sneaky good. He was really running at the end of that race, and he buried that field on the Pennsylvania Derby undercard right on the lead. He's got a lot of pedigree for a really good trainer, and I like everything about that horse, and I'm using him. And the other horse for me, who just feels like he could be a really big price in this race, is the 11, Me and Mr. C. And I don't know what kind of trip he can get from post 11. But he's another horse who has sneaky pedigree for a very dangerous and underrated trainer. And I don't know why they cut him back to 5.5 last time, Steve. It was never going to work out. And he got outrun after getting bumped at the start. And he really ran at the end to get second. And I don't know, his Delaware debut, he got a very indecisive ride in that race and still overcame it. And won really easily. I think that horse is a lot better than he looks on paper. He's going to be a huge price in this race. I'm going to use him, too.
Well, and Ned Allard, as you mentioned, does a great job and comes up, you know, when he's got something to bring. He's not, he's not coming up
right
just for the sake of it. So, yeah, I like Ned, too. I agree. Well, it is a terrific weekend of racing in New York. Do you want to talk about the big Sunday Chad Brown matchup that materialized?
What's this? The big Chad Brown matchup?
Well, you got on Sunday. For goodness sakes, not just Chad Brown.
The third race.
Larry Bestnet. Yeah.
Complexity and Instagram.
Yes.
It's
That's
interesting
right,
because, yeah, I mean, I don't really, you know, it's funny. I don't know what to expect from either of those two horses, but it'll be quite a show if they both show up and run their best races. Like, they both have speed. It feels like they both kind of want the lead. I don't know. I'm having right now, actually, right when you called, that was, you know, sort of looking at those races and like, which, you know, I'm going to take one of them on top. Which way am I going to go? I'm sort of leaning towards Instagram right now, but. We'll see. That's going to be a fun race if they both show up. I hope they do.
I'm also amused that Batuman shows up, who feels he's only five, but it feels like he's been around for 7 years, 8 years. It's
so true. You're so right about that. Remember, I mean, I can still remember him as a 2-year-old when he won Sanford? I think he won the Sanford. I still remember that. Like, he was going to turn out to be really good. I guess it never really happened, but he's been around.
He's had a decent. He's very useful. Michael Dilger had him, and we tried to claim him. I got outshook for him.
A
couple of summers ago. Yeah,
I'll tell you what, that would have been a good horse to claim. All he does is run. He shows up and runs for everybody.
Yep. Is it Dilger or was it Eddie Keneally?
Keneally at the start, right? I think Keneally had him.
Keneally first,
Keneally had him. Yeah, and then he cycled through every barn. Like, everybody's had this horse.
He does run for everybody, and actually reminds me of a horse that we had too, the New York bred Pretension, that we claimed and had for one start, one win, and he just ran. Didn't matter. He's just a classy gelding.
Those are the best horses. They're the best.
This is a good race. The third race, Complexity, comes back out of the Woody Stevens and Instagram, and the reason they line up next to each other. The reason I said Chad Brown just because. You know, Larry Best, Oxo Equine, and Chad's got quite a few for Larry Best. So it's a little one of those situations where if Complexity wins, Chad may get one of those texts or phone calls.
Right.
Yeah. No, they understand, guys. The guys are good about that. Mike, this was tremendous. really appreciate the Breeders' Cup preview and the weekend action, and we'll reach out to you for next week.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Good luck out there.
Mike Beer, everybody, and the lead voice, lead handicap for the Daily Racing Form. And he's not a huge tweeter, but DRF underscore Beer. He's got a terrific opinion. Mike's got a great approach. I like that he is into Yoshida in the Classic. Let's take a break. Brian Sanfratello is going to join us from the Pennsylvania Breeders, and the report for Mare's Bread yesterday. Pennsylvania continues to draw mares, and from that standpoint, a positive. Let's get some thoughts from Brian. When we come back, Jeff Siegel and Hammer and Ed DeRosa in this hour as well. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions 3 straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, the roof is leaking and the rain's falling on my head. It won't stop. The roof is leaking and the rain's falling on my head. I need a mop. I cry so hard, teardrops on my face.
We're back at the races. Just about 11 o'clock. In fact, it is 11 o'clock. Got an hour to spend leading into really a nice weekend of racing. I talked about the regional opportunities We'll talk to Ed DeRosa, and I'm not going to have a conversation about New Mexico's program, but Ohio this weekend. Right now, Brian Sanfratello joins us. And the report yesterday from Jockey Club and the report of Mayor's Bread, another very strong year for the Pennsylvania breeding community, with Oklahoma, the two states that saw an increase in mares.